Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Negotiation Podcast. I am your host, Todd Embley. Today's episode is a bit different. We're bringing you a special conversation about Prime Minister Mark Carney's recent visit to China, the first by a Canadian leader in years, and what it means for Canadian businesses and Canada-China relations. WPIC CEO Jacob Cook was actually in Beijing during the Prime Minister's visit, so he's stepping in as host for this episode to interview Bijan Ahmadi of the Canada-China Business Council. Enjoy.
The big win from this trip, as I said, is that the tariff agreement, basically. China from last year imposed high counter tariffs on Canadian agri-food products, you know, canola seed, canola oil, pulses and peas and Canadian seafood products, pork as well. Because of the tariffs that Canada imposed on, especially on Chinese EVs during the previous federal government in Canada.
Home to over 4 billion people, the Asia-Pacific region boasts one of the most powerful consumer markets on the planet. Not only is it home to half of the world's under 30 population, but it's also home to more than half the world's internet users. It's a market that no globally minded organization should ignore. But entering markets like China, Japan, or Southeast Asia is no easy task. Just ask the likes of Microsoft, Google, Uber, and Facebook. However, times are changing, and with the right partners, doors are slowly opening as more and more companies find success growing their key markets in APAC. I myself spent 8 years in China, mostly as a venture capitalist, helping early-stage tech companies grow in the Asia-Pacific market successfully. This show is dedicated to uncovering and examining successful Asia market entry and growth strategies by interviewing the experts who've done it before and truly understand what it takes to be successful in the region. My name is Todd Embley, and welcome to the Negotiation, brought to you by WPIC Marketing and Technologies.
Hi, everyone. This is Jacob Cook, co-founder and CEO of WPIC Marketing and Technologies. I'm jumping in the host chair today to interview Bijan Ahmadi, Executive Director and COO at the Canada-China Business Council, the leading organization supporting Canadian businesses in China and strengthening bilateral commercial ties. Along with Bijan, I had the opportunity to be in Beijing during Mark Carney's visit to China, and I saw firsthand the energy and optimism around this trip. The first visit by a Canadian prime minister in years. There's a lot to unpack, the specific agreements reached, what that means for different sectors of the Canadian economy, and how this visit really fits into the broader arc of Canada-China relations. Bijan brings deep expertise in trade policy, market access, and on-the-ground realities for Canadian businesses, and just the problems that we face is really, you know, you've been there. So I'm looking forward to getting his perspective on what was accomplished and what comes next. Bijan, welcome to the Negotiation.
Hi, Jacob. It's great to be with you here and joining your program. Thank you for inviting me.
So set the stage for us. Why was Carney's visit so significant in light of the last decade of Canada-China relations?
Sure. So as you said, Jacob, this trip by Canadian Prime Minister to China happened after 8 years. So the fact that this visit happened itself was very significant. And it marks a turning point, as Prime Minister Carney called it as well, a turning point and an end to a period of strain and bilateral tensions between Canada and China. Now, this re-engagement, if we want to call it, didn't start with the visit, but it was a major milestone. The reality is that since last year, when Prime Minister Carney came to office, he said that he wants to have a more pragmatic approach to our foreign and trade policy, not just with China, but including China, but other major trading partners with Canada as well. For example, India is another example. And since that time that he came to office, he started, a kind of path of re-engagement with China. It started with meetings and conversations with Premier Li Qiang, a meeting with President Xi, and also ministerial visits and engagements as well. But this trip, this visit was now a milestone and a successful milestone in his efforts towards recalibrating relations with China and re-engagement after a period of strain and tensions in our bilateral relationship.
So you talk about recalibrating. So is it fair to say then, you know, this is a reset going forward, and we'll be, you know, kind of marking this as, you know, day zero and of the new relationship?
I think it's a fair assessment to call it a reset. But, you know, sometimes when we talk about a reset, some have the perception that we're kind of going back to a previous era. The reality is that we're living in a different period. So we're not going back to the way that our relationship was 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. The geopolitical forces, the geopolitical shifts that are happening in the international system, in the global trading environment, but more broadly, geopolitically overall, set this as a different period. So our relationship with China and other countries around the world, even with the United States, will be different to what it was years past. So when we talk about a reset, we should not think that it's our relationship is going back to the past, to a past era, but rather that we are now entering a period marked by re-engagement with China, that we have a period of pragmatic engagement between the two governments, that they can discuss and through dialogue and negotiations resolve, manage differences, but also resolve the challenges that we face, especially when it comes with when it comes to trade and economic relationship between Canada and China. And a good kind of example of that type of approach is the agreement that Prime Minister Carney reached with China during this visit to remove or reduce the counter tariffs that were imposed by China on our agri-food products in return for a calibrated limited agreement that Canada reached for on giving access to Chinese EVs to the Canadian market.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I like the word recalibrate more, really, as it's kind of building on what was already laid out. You talked a little bit about the specific deals. I'd love to pick your brain about that a little bit more. Could you walk us through the specific outcomes and the deals from this trip and how that, you know, the different wins that were represented for the different sectors of the Canadian economy?
Sure. So the big win from this trip, as I said, is that the tariff agreement, basically. China from last year imposed high counter tariffs on Canadian agri-food products, you know, canola seed, canola oil, pulses and peas and Canadian seafood products, pork as well. Because of the tariffs that Canada imposed on especially on Chinese EVs during the previous federal government in Canada. Basically, at that time, during the Biden administration, Canada wanted to align its EV policy with the United States, and we imposed a high 100% tariffs on Chinese EVs. Now, during this trip, what was agreed on is that Canada is going to allow around 49,000 Chinese EVs to enter Canada at a very low rate. And in return, so we remove basically that 100% EV tariffs on a limited number of Chinese EVs, which essentially is basically 3% of our auto market overall. And in return, China reduced or eliminated the counter tariffs that they imposed on major Canadian agri-food products. Pork, the counter tariff on pork is still there. But when it comes to canola, which is very significant for Canadian exporters, especially in our western provinces, pulses and peas, Canadian seafood, those counter tariffs have been reduced or eliminated. Market access for our beef exports have been restored as well. So this agreement on Canadian agri-food and EV, that was a big win. But also more broadly, Canada and China agreed on a roadmap. It's called the Economic and Trade Roadmap, which did two things. It charts a path ahead for bilateral trade and investment between Canada and China, and at the same time, it establishes or reconvenes some of the dialogue mechanisms that we used to have or that it is essential for us to have to be able to discuss bilaterally challenges and opportunities, both challenges in terms of trade challenges and also bilateral investment. And some of them are sectoral. For example, the two sides agreed to establish mechanisms, bilateral mechanisms for dialogue on the financial services sector. It's called the Financial Working Group. another one about energy, so ministerial dialogue on energy, and also a joint committee on agricultural cooperation. So those sectoral dialogue mechanisms will help us in the years ahead to resolve the challenges, to explore opportunities for expanding our exports and imports, so both our trade and bilateral investment in those particular areas as well. So it was both, if I want to kind of sum it up, the agreement on tariffs, which de-escalated and gave us a path ahead on those particular items on our agricultural products and the EV. So that's the immediate win. And then kind of more broadly looking ahead for the years ahead, agreeing on these mechanisms that will allow us to step by step build up the relationship and really achieve that goal that Prime Minister set himself of expanding our exports to China by 50% within a matter of 4 to 5 years.
Certainly an ambitious goal. Being part of that trip, it was just amazing to see so many things get done. And actually that framework that you were discussing was actually done on the first day of that trip. So it kind of got overshadowed by the sheer number of deals done on the second day. But you're right, that's the framework that actually is going to lead to a massive increase in trade. So thank you for explaining that. What was the CCVC's role in the trip? I remember the dinner at the end there too, just before the Prime Minister left. And in general, how have the members reacted to this trip?
Sure. So, of course, during the visit, we had a major banquet, a trade and investment banquet that we hosted. But even before the visit and through this process of recalibration that is started by the government, we have tried to, be involved, be engaged, be in touch with government at different levels, but specifically here with the federal government, to ensure that the voices of our members are heard, that we provide policy recommendations that we think would be helpful for this process of re-engagement and recalibration. But during the visit, as you said, we hosted this this major banquet, which was the major business engagement during the visit. We had Prime Minister Mark Carney and also Vice Premier He Lifang from China delivering keynote remarks at the event. And they both had their ministerial delegations, officials delegations participating with them in this banquet as well, which really provided, you were there, Jacob, so I'm sure you experienced it firsthand yourself and your colleagues, but it really gave opportunity for our members to engage with the officials delegations, with the ministerial engagement. The members who are present in the room, like yourself, you all have been involved in the relationship for a very long time during the ups and downs of the relationship. Many of our members, during the past 8 years, they face challenges because of the unpredictable, unstable policy environment between Canada and China. So the energy in the room was very positive and optimistic, because now they see that we are going in a more positive direction. They see the light at the end of the tunnel and think that now we are on the right path. And so that is kind of my observation. But if I want to link it to some data points that I have, which for the first time I'm sharing it here with your viewers and listeners, we're in the process of releasing our latest survey results. So every 2 years we publish Canada-China Business Survey Report. We conducted this latest survey around end of 2025, early 2026, as the visit was happening as well. And if I want to share, we're going to publish the full report in a couple of weeks, but if I want to share kind of a couple of points from it, over 80% of the Canadian companies surveyed believe that this process of re-engagement that Prime Minister has started is going to have a positive impact on their business, on their companies. Over two-thirds of Canadian companies are looking to expand their footprint and their operations in China. And majority of the businesses that we surveyed are optimistic or hopeful about Canada-China business relations, which shows overall a very kind of a strong turning point from what we observed in the last survey that we did, which was in 2023.
I was just going to clarify, that's for all Canadian businesses, not just CCBC members, correct?
They are not CCBC members necessarily, yeah. So we do actually this survey in collaboration with Rotman School of Management, with a couple of researchers there at the University of Toronto, and it's not limited to CCBC members only.
That 80% is a big number. That definitely represents a huge tide shift. So this is a big deal. That's great. So what are the challenges, you know, now that, you know, Canadian businesses and their perception is really changing, what are the challenges you think that the CCBC will work towards solving for Canadian businesses getting towards that 50% growth rate?
Sure. So, you know, overall, our work, Jacob, revolves around three pillars, if I want to divide it. The first one is that we act as a facilitator, as a connector, as a B2B connector. We connect in our membership network, businesses, Canadian businesses that are looking for customers, partners, investors on the Chinese side. We try to connect them. The second pillar of our work is, you know, a knowledge platform. On a regular basis, we publish research reports on latest developments in the trade environment, in the bilateral investment environment. For our members specifically, we host both in-person roundtables and also webinars to provide them with latest information about the bilateral policy environment, regulatory environment. So that's the kind of the second pillar. And the third one is our advocacy work. We're the leading voice of the Canadian business community in front of different levels of government in Canada and also in China. So in each of these pillars, there are things that we now need to do based on the agreements reached, specifically those broader agreements, the trade and economic roadmap that we're going to focus on, both in terms of the sectors that were identified in that roadmap. So we'll focus some of the trade missions that, for example, we have this year on some of those sectors. Clean tech, for example, has been discussed as one of those sectors of opportunity for further bilateral cooperation. So in 2026, we're going to have most likely a trade mission from Canada to China focus on that sector. Energy is a big piece that we definitely will focus on further as well, both in the conventional sense and also new forms of energy when it comes to wind, solar, hydrogen, etc. And also, you know, consumer products. That was actually identified as one of those areas of potential cooperation as well. You're very well aware, Jacob, that, for example, when it comes to health and wellness, there are good opportunities for Canadian companies in China. We have good members in those sectors as well. So we'll try to provide them support in kind of different fields of services that we provide as well.
Yeah, we know the sector well, for sure. You know, a lot of great consumption habits are built around look good and feel good. So that's great. In a less sort of positive light, you know, Trump is threatening, we're only a couple of weeks after this trade visit, and we're getting threatened over a potential deal with China. But there doesn't seem to be really anything more ambitious in terms of, you know, what's, you know, in the cards beyond what was signed in Beijing, correct? And you know, saying that, there's really no conflict with anything that I see that's being signed here. You know, in terms of a lot of the products that you talked about, really none of those would be going to the US anyway. And the cars that are coming here really just back to levels they were 2 or 3 years ago. So there's media picking up on a story about dumping cars from Canada into the US is just nonsense. We all know that. In terms of what we're trying to negotiate, nothing more than bilateral trade. Maybe just over to you for that too as well. And what are you hearing about that? And any more concerns from the members on what they're hearing from the US side?
Sure. So, you know, when it comes to CUSMA or USMCA, there is a clause there that would prevent Canada from entering a free trade agreement with China. But what we achieved in China during this visit by Prime Minister and what has been already under discussion so far, there is no conversation about a free trade agreement. So no one, the Chinese side, the Canadian side, we're not pursuing a free trade agreement with China. What was reached was a limited agreement, sectoral agreement, if we want to call it that. And there is nothing in CUSMA that would prevent us from reaching these sort of sectoral agreements. But also, you know, other major allies and trading partners of Canada are doing the same. Our friends in Europe, comes to Germany, France, or, for example, other countries like UK, Australia, they are also entering into these or pursuing these type of sectoral agreements with China. After Prime Minister
and so
Carney,
is the US too.
Exactly. And I wanted to add that too, that, you know, Prime Minister of UK was there after Prime Minister Carney, and President Trump is going to China, as we know, in April as well. And he has been, you know, pursuing deals with China, for example, for American farmers, when it comes to soybean producers and others. So these are the type of agreements that everyone, including the United States, are pursuing with China. So there is nothing that would prevent us, again, in CUSMA on that. But, you know, one thing that we need to recognize, again, I go back to what I mentioned earlier, is that we are in a different geopolitical era. We are living in a period of what, you know, experts call great power competition and great power rivalry. And of course, those geopolitical pressures will impose challenges on our relationship with China. So one thing that we need to do, and there is no, you know, there is no single answer about how we need to manage this era of great power competition. I don't think any of our other allies in Europe or Australia and others have figured this out as well. But for our sovereignty and for protecting our national prosperity, national interests, we need to figure this out. We need to be able to manage and maintain a strong alliance with the United States, especially in the security domain, for example, Arctic security, or when it comes to our relationship in NATO, but at the same time, be able to have strong trade and economic relationships with other trading partners, especially with our major trading partners, such as China, which is our second largest trading partner, a major source of foreign direct investment into Canada. We need to be able to balance these and manage these different forces at play. And that is a kind of a big challenge. That's a big issue that is in front of us, not just this year, but for the years ahead, as this strategic competition continues between the superpowers in our international system.
Interesting times. You know, just as a concluding message, could you talk about the opportunity in China for the Canadian economy, you know, based on CCBC's research and time? And why is, you know, China so important, you know, for jobs, GDP, et cetera, for Canadians?
Sure. So, you know, as I said already, China is our second largest trading partner, a major source of foreign direct investment into Canada. When you look at both mainland China and Hong Kong, around $65 billion of the foreign direct investment stock in Canada from China and Hong Kong is around $65 billion. That makes China a major, a leading source of investment, foreign investment into Canada. Around 400,000 Canadian jobs are linked to trade and investment relations with China. So already China is a big deal for the Canadian economy. But also, when we look at our priority for diversification in the, you know, in 2026 and years ahead, especially with that goal that Prime Minister has said that in the next 10 years, we want to double our non-US exports, China plays a big role. You know, we know that overall, to be able to achieve that goal, we need to prioritize the Asia-Pacific region, because that's where the economic growth is happening. That's where the, you know, the middle-class consumer base is still growing. So Asia-Pacific region is a major priority for us for that, that purpose, that intention of diversification. But specifically in that region, China itself is you know, on top of the list. China represents over 50% of the opportunities for Canadian exporters. And this is not just based on our research at CCBC. You know, we don't have time to get into the details, but Export Development Canada conducted a very comprehensive research and study on this, which was published a couple of years ago. So for your viewers, if they're interested, they can look at this EDC report on markets of opportunities for Canadian exporters, which really shows the importance of China in the and the Asia Pacific market more broadly. So both for, you know, our economy currently and the Canadian jobs, those 400,000 Canadian jobs, but also for what we want to achieve in the years ahead in terms of diversifying our export markets, growing our exports to non-US markets, China is very important for Canadian economy. And for that reason, engagement with China is not optional. It's definitely necessary and essential.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. you know, we've seen numbers even higher than 400,000, I think, in some estimates to University of Alberta, et cetera. I think that number's up to, could even be up as high as 800,000 indirect. So it's obviously truly important. We know that. We at WPIC know that. So thanks, Bijan. WPIC, you know, really appreciates what CCBC does, their ongoing support for this trade relationship, its importance for Canada, and everything they've done for WPIC as a whole. And not only thank to you and the organization, but also thank you for everyone for listening.
Thank you so much, Jacob. I appreciate your support at WPIC.
Growing a company is hard. Doing it in a foreign market, exponentially so. The best piece of advice I can give you is not to do it alone. When you start looking at the Asia-Pacific region for further expansion possibilities, and I sincerely hope you do, make sure you choose the right partners to do it with. My good friends at WPIC Marketing and Technologies have almost 20 years of experience helping brands, just like yours, enter China, Japan, and Southeast Asia. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Negotiation, and if you're interested in being a guest or want to connect with me or any of our team, please reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co, and be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.